Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Seth and I are going to spring training, February 24th through the 28th. That week, we're going to be in West Palm Beach, going to the games, bringing it all to you, popping in on the other shows while we're down there to give you the eyewitness correspondence report on the Houston Astros spring training.
And hopefully running into a few of you listeners that go to spring training as
well. Yeah.
Reach out to Sean for that kind of stuff. Logistically, you guys know my issues.
Hit me. Seriously. If you're especially the easiest way to hit me, because if you do it on the text page during the show, it'll get lost in a sea of texts. But my DMs are open. You can hit me on Twitter if you're going down to spring training. We'll hook up.
Yeah. You know, the one guy I'm really excited to see that I don't know if, you know, he's probably gotten as much attention as he should after the Tucker trade was Cam Smith.
Yeah.
Because Cam Smith, he's the Astros' top-ranked prospect now. And he was a guy that initially, when I started reading about the Cubs having interest in Kyle Tucker, the reporters out of Chicago were saying that they really didn't want to give up Cam Smith. So that might be a barrier to some kind of a trade or something. So the fact that Cam Smith's going to be out there and might become Kyle Tucker's replacement, it'll be fun to see him in person.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, let's hear from Joe Espada on that, because Cam Smith could wind up in any number of places on this team.
Yeah,
very versatile player. Here was Joe Espada. He was on Chandler Rome's podcast. And here was Joe Espada's assessment of Cam Smith.
He's got potential to be, you know, one of those, you know, this guy can carry your team for years. He's got that potential, right? You know, I like to be careful how I word this, because I don't want him, you know, coming into camp thinking that this got to happen tomorrow. No, Cam Smith is going to let us know when he's ready to be the guy, right? But you know, he can play. He could play third base. I think he's athletic enough to play corner outfields. But right now, he's going to come in. I'm going to play him at third because that's his natural position. You know, he moves so well for a guy his size that's why, you know, you just don't know, right, where he's going to end up, because he's going to tell you. There's so much potential that I think we just got to go slow and let him tell us where he's going to end up. But the bat is special. It's right center field power. This guy knows his zone.
Okay, we'll get into what this all means from a baseball standpoint, Seth, real quick.
Yeah.
I love Joe Espada, because Joe Espada, you could tell at the beginning, is pausing there, trying to figure out how best to articulate how good a player he is. And he's like, got to be careful with this one here. Let's see.
I did say Jose Abreu was one of the keys to actually achieving our ultimate goals. Yeah.
I got to be careful. He is a player that could carry the team for years and years moving forward. That is his potential. And I'm like, wow, no pressure there. And then 10 seconds later, Joe Espada, who's still gushing about Cam Smith, says, I've got to be careful with how I word this. I'm like, that ship sailed already, buddy.
Well, no, I think even though in him talking about, I think in his mind, he's like, oh, I hope we can put him in right field. But he's like, we're gonna start it. You know, you don't want to overload the young guy. You're going to let him stay where he's most comfortable right now at third base. But he sure could play out there at right field. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the first thing you got to make sure is he can hit major league pitching. You know, whatever position he is, he can't go in there and have a 614 OPS.
I think you want to keep him as comfortable as possible without doing all kinds of different, playing him in multiple different spots in the field and everything until you feel comfortable with him. Playing outfield isn't nearly as big a challenge as just actually hitting the baseball.
Correct. So what has me excited, I'm with you, I'm excited to see Cam Smith. He will be there at spring training, so that'll be really good. FanGraphs has their percentages out on winning the various divisions. And the closest division by far in terms of parity is the AL West. The top three teams in the AL West are all within 3 percentage points of each other when it comes to percentage chance of winning the division. The Rangers, 33%. The Mariners, 31%. The Astros, 30%. And I know we've lived in an era where the Astros have dominated this division. Now, the actual divisional races have become closer the last couple of years. Just the Astros have still won the division. So in terms of owning the division, the Astros have been, I mean, there's been no team more dominant in owning a division probably since the Braves back in the 90s, if I had to guess. 8 straight years other than the COVID year when they finished 29 and 31. They have dominated this division really since 2017. I'm kind of excited about this. Like if the season plays out the way FanGraphs thinks it'll play out, and you got three teams, the importance of all of those games with the Rangers and the Mariners, like, it almost, and we experienced this the last couple years, it almost creates de facto playoff games in September that, you know, that we didn't get before because the Astros were so dominant. Not, would I rather they be dominant and feel better about winning overall a World Series? Yes. But this is a new kind of fun for me going into the season where it feels kind of even.
It feels kind of even. The only thing is the bastard stepchild, the A's, where they'll be the Sacramento A's this year. That's the one little thing within the division that I'm like, all right. So eventually we'll be able to get excited about making a road trip to Las Vegas, but for the next couple of years, it's going to be Sacramento, baby.
I think Amy and I are going to actually make a road trip to Sacramento just to go experience it. They aren't even going to be called the Sacramento A's. They're just in the standings. When you look at it, it'll just say Athletics. That's it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They will be a cityless team this year in the standings.
Could they at least call them they should call them like the Southwestern A's or something. I don't know.
I'm just telling you.
Because at least then they're kind of, you know, it combines Oakland, Sacramento, and Las Vegas, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Southwestern Pacific.
Just the A's.
Does that make them sound like a railroad, which is basically what they are? They're running routes between various. They're just
a bunch of baseball hobos with their bindle over their shoulder.
Yeah.
Walking to the next town. Yeah. So the Astros, there's probably Astro fans a little mad at me that I'm like, oh, cool. The Astros have a 30% chance to win the division, and it's super even. Sean's real excited about this.
No, I don't know. I think most people are just, A, you're excited for baseball season, but B, all right, this is what it is, and this is where the Astros are. A lot of people are starting to, they're marginally counting the Astros out.
Yeah.
Okay, the Astros aren't a superpower anymore. Oh, your pipeline is trash. All of this. Yeah, it's time to, you know what, Sean? It's nice to feel like it's you against the world, and it's not anything to do with 2017.
That's right.
It's more just the conventional, like, oh, yeah, people are counting the Astros out. Let's do this thing.
If they were to win this one, and they could, you know, they're like, if when the World Series odds come out, I'm guessing the Astros, even without Bregman, are still going to be one of the top 7 or 8 teams on the board.
Yeah.
Teams further outside of the top 7 or 8 going into the season have gone on to win the World Series over the last several years. We know this because two of them beat the Astros in the World Series, the Nationals in 19 and the Braves in 2021. If the Astros were to go on and win the World Series this year, if we're comparing to the other two, like this to me would be the most gratifying one. You know, like this is like you lost a ton. You know, you're at the part of your arc where you're closer to rebuilding and retooling than you are dominance. And the 2022 one was pretty good because you shut up all the better than being everybody else scandal haters. And 2017 was pretty good because it was the first one. But if you did it, like with the total retool, like losing Tucker and Bregman, not just two of your best players, but two of the best players, Like, they're both among every list of the top 50 or 60 players in baseball. You know, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but if they were able to pull this thing off, man, this would be a coup.
Yeah, the problem is you start throwing that many ifs into an equation, and it feels a little bit like a Bill O'Brien scenario, Sean. Hey, all we need to happen is for these 19 weird things to work out.
Okay,
no,
so
I do 100% agree with you. Right? It's a baseball more than any other sport these days. It feels like, man, it's anything could happen.
Yeah. You catch fire. I mean, you have pitching at the top of that rotation. If you get the best version of Framber Valdez and Hunter Brown, and I don't think that's a huge if, then yeah, you go into a 7-game series feeling pretty good about being able to be the team that wins 4. Now, like, the things I started to think, like, okay, what could pull the Astros out of this muck that they're in with the Mariners and the Rangers? Like, this looks like it's going to be just sort of a 3-way death match this season, which, again, I'm excited for. I'm going to say some things here that are going to trigger people even more than me being excited about the Astros being in this, like, 3-way dance. What if Lance McCullers comes out of nowhere and he provides you a really high-level third arm at the top of the rotation?
Sean, I appreciate your gumption, and I very much emotionally want that. I would be happy for Lance personally, for one, because it's not like... This is a frustrating thing with how upset people get with Lance. Lance works his butt off. If anything, he might work too hard.
He loves Houston. That,
I know. Yeah, I just flat out. He was probably the first Astro to get a Houston tattoo in a long, long time when he got his Houston tattoo. And it's not for lack of effort or caring or anything else like that. He does everything the right way except for the staying healthy part.
Yeah.
But I'm at a point where it's been 3 seasons now. Yeah. You know, like, I can't. I really, really would love for that to happen for multiple reasons, but I just can't bank on it.
Right.
But yes, that would be a very welcome development.
These are things that I've come up with that have very little chance of that I think most people are very minimally invested in these things happening.
Yeah.
But if Lance comes back healthy at some point during the season, that's one. These are just things that could separate them potentially from what we expect the Rangers and the Mariners and the Astros to be. If Jeremy Peña takes a step all of a sudden, like, Jeremy Peña's heading into his 4th year, and there have been times that Jeremy Peña's career, and I'm not talking about the defense. The defense will be fine. I know he made some weird errors last year, but Jeremy Peña's an elite defensive shortstop. But if all of a sudden Jeremy Peña, like, if 2022 postseason Peña turns into something more than this 3 or 4 week dalliance that we have every year, where we go, oh,
yeah,
man, look at Peña. Peña's caught fire. And then you look up at the end of the year and his OPS is 719. You know what I mean?
He
went from being a 700 OPS guy to like a 790 or 800 OPS guy.
I think the thing with Peña is, yes, he's getting to that point where you don't look at him as a prospect plus or anything anymore. He's been in the league long enough that you start to worry about, okay, maybe this is just who he is. Except that on two fronts. One, in his fielding last year, where he was a below average fielder on the sum total of everything because he had so many weird errors, he was still making incredible plays pretty consistently. So I feel like that's something that can totally be smoothed out, and that the best version of him defensively is still a really high ceiling. He's just got to figure out a few little things that he was doing last year.
Yeah.
And then some of the things at the plate, I mean, his expected batting average last year was way better than you would have expected to be. He doesn't strike out a lot. Like, there's still evidence that
he gets like 25 hits just by hitting ground balls in the infield.
Right, like, I know. You know. Yeah, he's such a good base runner.
Yeah, he's fast.
Yeah. So, like, all of those things and all of those traits are still there. From the advanced stats stuff. His best thing was his base running run value.
Yeah.
He was in the 89th percentile for that.
That makes sense.
I can't talk about him like he's a budding young prospect anymore, but I think it is still very much, he's still at a point in his career where you can capitalize on some of the really good things he does. He's just got to smooth out some of the issues.
Yep. So McCullers, Peña, these are all things that I think incrementally or big time could help separate the Astros in what FanGraphs expects to be a virtual 3-way tie in the AL West with the Rangers and the Mariners. This is probably a little more, like, smaller incremental than the big thing of, like, a Peña becoming a good hitter or, like, a great hitter, or McCullers being healthy. But just getting the version of Josh Hader you thought you were getting when you gave him 5 years, $95 million. And I say incremental because Hader overall was pretty good last year. He was pretty good last year. I think he was 34 of 38 on save opportunities. His ERA was a little high. I think some of that has to do with him. He gives up home runs sometimes that don't end up affecting the outcome of the game, but it affects his ERA. Like, he comes in, it's 4-1, and he'll give up a solo home run or something, which when you're a reliever and you're pitching one inning, that's a 9 ERA for that outing. You know what I mean?
And it is one of those things, too, that I think where you're just so thirsty for strikeouts all the time.
Yeah.
There is something to be said for just the game strategy side of things.
Yes.
Like that, you know, when good pitchers, veteran pitchers know when it's okay to give up a solo home run.
Yeah.
So you can be a little bit more aggressive in those situations.
That's true. That's true. I think, though, for Hader, like, I think we can all agree, like, that was not the version of Hader that everybody thought they were getting last year when they signed him. Like, he was good. He wasn't great. He wasn't an all-star. Like, you're paying him top market closer money for bunch of years, for 5 years, Seth. And they were giving away games at the beginning of the year. Like, if they're going to win this division way more convincingly than Fangraphs thinks they can win it, they can't give away games like they did last year with the bullpen. It's not just Hader, it's the whole bullpen.
The whole thing with Hader is, in his career, you know, after his first three seasons, he was kind of up and down. He'd have one so-so season, then one incredible season, then one so-so season. And then the year before, the Astros had an incredible season. And that was what was weird about the Astros signing him and paying all that money is, man, the Astros have made a lot of had a lot of success taking guys who had been struggling, like Gerrit Cole, and then bringing out the very best version of him, where it felt like the Astros paid for the very best version. And now you realize, like, all right, the Astros car wash, their pitching car wash, has to be something that smooths things out a little bit to where he's just a consistently 2 point whatever ERA guy.
Yep.
Instead of 3 or 4 1 year and then 1.5 the next.
Yeah, he can't. Well, 34 of 38. Like, you're paying Hader to be more like 37 for 38. You know what I mean? Like, he's supposed to be a guy who's automatic coming into games. And he wasn't automatic last year. Chaz. Can Chaz McCormick recapturing some of his 2022 and 2023 magic, is that a big ask, Seth? If we're talking about things that could get the Astros back to where there's some separation between them and the Mariners and Rangers?
Yes.
He was horrible last year.
That's a big ask.
He was terrible last year.
Yeah, I think it's a really big ask. Okay. I think the best thing for him is your most realistic hope is that he becomes an average Major League Baseball player. Yeah. I don't need anything magical. I just need some consistency to where it doesn't feel like it's a black hole in the lineup.
Yeah, he's your starting right fielder right now. The guy you had out there last year was a top five MVP candidate before he broke his leg with a foul ball. And now we've got a guy where you're saying, and I agree with you, that the best we can hope for is he becomes an average major league. The best we can
Which
hope
is
for.
Fine. There's a place for average players on every championship caliber team.
That's the ceiling we're forecasting for him right now.
Right. But I'd be cool with that. I don't feel like this is the worst thing in the world having him out there.
I totally agree with you. That's my point. Like, it makes me nervous. Like, I never expect anybody to hit their. I never feel like that's a promise or try to, you know, like that the ceiling is what I'm going to assume is going to happen. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm with you. I'm assuming it's probably somewhere in between what he was at his best and what he was at his worst last year.
Do we know, was Joe Espada taking him out for yogurt the way that Dusty would?
Banana pudding. If it was yogurt, that would be better because that's actually healthy. Banana pudding is what it was, remember?
And
it was making Chaz fat. Remember, people were complaining that Chaz looked fat. No, it wasn't people complaining. It was a rumor inside the building that they thought Chaz was overweight. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Dusty was taking him out for banana pudding.
It was like bringing it to him in the clubhouse.
It's like that point in the cartoon when you realize that the witch is fattening you up.
Yes.
To put you in her stew.
That's right. That's,
you know?
Same exact thing.
I think that a non-fat Chaz McCormick has the potential to be an average MLB player. Sean, seriously, have you ever had one serving of banana pudding?
Yes. You can never have just one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You've never had just one.
I thought you were asking me if I'd ever eaten banana pudding before.
Yeah, have you ever had just one serving of banana pudding?
Of course not, no.
No, you eat a vat of banana pudding.
Right, right.
And trick yourself into thinking it's health food because there's bananas in it. Which is the least healthy of all fruits.
The sugariest fruit that there is. And usually, what does banana pudding come with? Vanilla wafers. Stuck right in there in the top, like, and they're not decorative either. You eat those. They're
a lot of times,
not parsley.
The, A lot of times the Nilla wafers are stale. That's my one biggest complaint about banana pudding is a lot of times it's been sitting out on the buffet for way too long at the Golden Corral, and the Nilla wafers are a little stale.
Okay, here's a big question. Has it ever stopped you from eating them?
God no. Staleness has never been a barrier to anything in my life, okay? Whether it's food or sports takes, I'm all in on them.
People point this out. This, you can set your watch to this on the text page, the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line. Kyle Tucker sucked in the playoffs.
Screw that dude anyway.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we're excited. We're headed to spring training, getting ready to go see the Astros try to keep that AL West crown, and who knows what happens, man. We'll see. I don't know.
You left out Cam Smith too.
We talked about him on the.
But in terms of things like that, in terms of the things that, okay, are we wishing for too much? I don't think you're wishing for too much for Cam Smith to have a speedy ascension into the major leagues.
Okay,
Sean, I was watching Double A players all over the place on the major league in the major league ballpark last year. I've got an appetite for it.
All the things.
Bring up the Utes.
All the things I just listed. Okay, all the things. If you could pick one, I'm not saying which one has the best chance of happening. Take Hader out of it. I shouldn't even. Hader was fine last year.
Yeah.
But like of McCullers, if you could pick one of McCullers coming out of nowhere to be a top three rotation guy, Pena becoming an all-star level hitter at shortstop, Cam Smith becoming a good big leaguer this year, or Chaz, which would you pick?
I'm going to go based on Dana Brown, who opened up his discussion about Cam Smith by saying, this is a guy who could carry a franchise for years and years.
That was Espada who said that.
And then asked me not to get too excited or read too much into that.
Yeah.
After he said that Cam Smith is a guy who could carry a franchise for years and years, he said, but, you know, I don't want to get ahead of myself. Like, oh, sorry, man, you're already there. You've already opened up the condom package, my friend.
Yeah.
This thing's going down.
It's interesting because I think any of them are good choices. I think just for 2025, if it were just for 2025, I would say McCullers. Because then you got Hunter Brown, Framber Valdez. And look, Lance has been injured, but when he's pitched, he's been good. Like, that's the thing is with Lance is that when he's been healthy, he's been good. I think for 2025, I would pick Lance. But your choice there, Seth, like if Cam Smith shows that he is a qualified big league baseball player, you won the Kyle Tucker trade.
Yeah.
You got Cam Smith, a certifiable third baseman in the big leagues, for 1 year of Kyle Tucker.
If it ends up being, it would be like the Anthony Davis for Doncic trade, except that those guys are established players and what they are. But if Cam Smith turns into that, you traded for a guy that could be with you for a decade versus Kyle Tucker. But yeah, Kyle Tucker on a 1 year
and Paredes
deal.
And your fifth starter right now with Nesky. So
it's a give it to me now versus what can we do in the future.
Yep.
The other part about McCullers is, okay, do we see him as a reliever this year? Yeah, like it became something that people were even afraid to ask Lance McCullers because he was so adamant that he would never be anything other than a starting pitcher. Is this the year where he's like, you know what? I just want to be out there helping win baseball games.
Okay, that's the question. Does Lance see himself as a reliever more so than do the Astros see him as a reliever?
I would imagine it would be the point where he might feel like, I want to be a part of winning baseball games and play entire seasons, and that's the compromise you have to make at some point.
They paid him a lot of money not to pitch. You know what I mean? That factors in too.
We've already paid you up money to be a starting pitcher. Now you're going to earn some money as a reliever.
You're going to earn money doing what we ask you to do more than anything else. You know, like that's what it is. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. A lot of people weighing in on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line. We'll get to some of those. Let's get to some of them now. Since I think Pena can give you more power than he has for the Astros. That can be a big difference maker and really lengthen the lineup. He's a big strapping guy for a shortstop. He is a big strapping guy. That is true. If he makes the adjustment with his swing, he's capable of hitting home runs in the mid to upper 20s. He's hit 20 home runs before. He hit 22 home runs a couple of years ago.
Sean, he's just like the ratchet strap that we talked about yesterday. He's not just strapping, he's a ratchet strap in that it can be very powerful, but you gotta figure out exactly how to use it and get some of these kinks out of it.
Yep, okay? You gotta untangle Jeremy Pena, yes.
He spooled too much of the strap up under the spool there.
That's right.
That's a common issue with ratchet straps.
Relief pitchers need to be able to pitch back-to-back games. Lance McCullers will never be capable of that. Never, never, never. Okay.
Well, capable of it if he's only out there for an inning.
Right.
I mean, it's a whole different deal.
Yeah,
whole different scenario.
Totally different. So this was interesting, just shifting gears a little bit. Aaron Glenn, new coach of the New York Jets, kind of laid down the law with Aaron Rodgers, it sounds like. This is Diana Rossini and Chase Daniel on their podcast. They've got a podcast together that they do, I believe, for The Athletic. And this is Diana Rossini talking about what she heard in the building about what Aaron Glenn told Aaron Rodgers. This is how it's going to need to look if you're going to be the quarterback of the Jets.
I was told that when they had conversations with Aaron Rodgers about what the future would look like, if you're going to be part of this team, you're going to attend all of the training camp. You're not going to do Pat McAfee interviews anymore. So they were really trying to change the way.
They said that?
Yeah. They had a conversation with him of, if you were to stay here, here's how we would want it to be. So this, to me, is Aaron Glenn getting control back. And Glenn making sure that...
Who said that to him?
The GM and the head coach, when they had these conversations of, look, I think it's Aaron Glenn that's the one pushing for, I'm holding everyone accountable, and every single person on this team is going to be treated the same way.
So do you think that if he would have agreed to not do that stuff, that he would have been their quarterback? Or do you think he was just thinking like, I don't want to be controlled. I don't want to be put in a box. This is fast. I knew none of this. And this is extremely fascinating to me hearing you say that.
I think that no matter what the Jets were going to say, Aaron Rodgers wanted to move on.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's the part about that that's interesting to me, Seth, was the very first part where they said you can't do the Pat McAfee show anymore.
Right, yeah.
You know, like that's a media hit that he does every week. Now, that was a media hit that I would imagine caused a lot of ripples in the locker room, especially when he's doing it during that season where he's really not around. He's rehabbing an Achilles tear, you know?
The point where it reached maximum what the hell is going on here with Aaron Rodgers on the McAfee show, for me, it was never about anything outside the world of football. It was when he called out people within the organization for not addressing things internally by calling them out on the Pat McAfee show.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, wait, what in the inception is going on here?
Exactly.
You're criticizing people for not keeping things in-house on the Pat McAfee show.
Right.
I know, and it's one of those things where if you're a new head coach, especially, I think, and a first-time head coach, you want to try to keep things as vanilla as possible in terms of drama or anything like that. You're going to have enough drama just with personnel changes and all that other stuff that they want to just try to keep the car in the center of the lane as much as possible. And it just gets a lot harder to manage, especially in that New York media environment when you're adding fuel, when your quarterback is the guy who is out there adding fuel to the fire and the flames.
Yep. What's interesting about, there's two things interesting about that to me, that what we just listened to Diana Rossini say. One is the Pat McAfee dynamic of them laying down that condition of not doing the Pat McAfee show, because I do think that there's probably a lot of front offices that have players on their rosters that are doing podcasts and doing media hits, mostly podcasts, because as you pointed out many times, these players get on these podcasts and they forget that they're actually recording these things.
There's like a 45 minute mark.
Yeah.
You know what? It's interesting too, Sean, because in cardiovascular exercise, it's about the 45 minute mark where all of a sudden your body just switches way more efficiently into using fat as a fuel.
Oh,
and
really?
Maybe that's what happens on a podcast. It's like at some point your brain metabolism changes at 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And that's when you start, you forget, you get the runner's high.
Yeah.
It's the podcaster's high.
Yeah.
At 45 minutes.
Yeah.
After the 45-minute mark, you're on the podcaster's high, and you've forgotten that people are going to listen to this or that it might have ramifications outside, and you're just having a conversation with
a friend. Telling me I got to go 15 more minutes till I'm actually burning fat efficiently?
It was at the 47-minute mark when Rusty Harden told us that happy endings weren't illegal.
That's not inaccurate, by the way.
Not a crime.
That's... That is 100% true. That is, and he's 80 years old.
And it
he probably hit the 45-minute mark at about the 25-minute mark, you know? Oh, that's funny. We need a conversion chart. But here's where I was going with that. I do wonder if that's something that, I don't know if we'll ever find out about it, but if that's something that teams that are in a contract negotiation or have some leverage over a player in a negotiation start to say, okay, Zaire Franklin, we need you to stop doing this podcast where you're pissing off all of our opponents.
And that's where we've been in kind of a gray area for the last decade, really, but especially the last 5 years, I think, where older GMs are trying to figure out, okay, what's the world in which these younger guys are operating? And we don't want to put too many restrictions on them. We need to understand that we're getting old and we're never going to understand the youth necessarily. So how hard of a line do you draw on limiting guys' off-field activities?
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe Aaron's going to be the guy that, still relatively young, can kind of draw a hard line and be like, listen, no, we're not going to do stuff off the field that's gonna end up being a distraction in any way, shape, or form.
Yes.
So does Aaron effectively put a muzzle on some of this stuff?
Right. So number one for me was, do more teams take this stance with guys doing some form of media? Number two, and I think this is kind of where you were going here, with specific to Aaron Rodgers, is they wanted Aaron Rodgers back. I think if they didn't want him back, Aaron Glenn, to me, is every bit of communication I've seen with Aaron Glenn is he's not somebody who's going to dance around things. He's very direct. You were his teammate for several years,
yeah.
So you can speak on that.
Oh, yeah, that's 100%.
If he didn't want Aaron Rodgers, he would have brought Aaron Rodgers in and said, we don't want you anymore. Like
Okay, because clearly there are qualifications.
Well, that's where I'm going with this, is that clearly they wanted him. They think Aaron Rodgers can still play, but not play to the degree where he's worth all this other stuff going on.
Well, but I wonder, though, I don't know if I would draw the same conclusion, because I think that meeting might have been Aaron Rodgers trying to figure out that decision, and including that, like, as a starter, we've got certain qualifications, and part of that might have been that, I want to feel this guy out to feel, if we bring in a rookie quarterback, if it looks like Aaron Rodgers might end up being a mentor or a bridge quarterback, is he going to be cool with that?
Maybe.
And if Aaron Rodgers said all the right things, then maybe he really would have felt that way. So I think that, in my mind, Aaron Rodgers was open to the possibility, but there were going to be a bunch of qualifications.
Right. I think what's interesting about that, though, Seth, is that, like, if this were 2 years ago, I think even if Aaron Glenn were the coach, there would have been no conversation about the hits on McAfee's show or this or that. Like, Aaron Rodgers we're 3 years removed from him being the MVP of the league twice in a row. You know, like his play has, and maybe overall health too, have descended to a level where there are qualifiers for it. I think 3 years ago, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Aaron Glenn wouldn't have wanted any of the BS, even it's MVP Aaron Rodgers that you're getting. Maybe he would have drawn that hard of a line in all this. I don't think any team would have a couple of years ago when Rodgers was still playing at a high level. He's now one of those guys that, yeah, we want you, but here's the conditions we want you under.
Right. Well, no, and I think, too, that comes to the psychology of Aaron Rodgers himself. If you look at some aging athletes, like, let's say Zach Greinke. Greinke did a magnificent job of accepting that his physical skills were diminishing, and he became a different pitcher. He became a junkier pitcher, as he got older, and he did a magnificent job of it. And some quarterbacks have done the same. They've realized they've had to modify their game. And I don't think Aaron Rodgers necessarily had an appetite for reinventing himself in his 40s.
Yep. I think that's fair. I think that is fair. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Text message. Rusty holds the title for top moment in sports radio 610 history. It's in the pantheon for sure. It's definitely in the pantheon.
It's not a crime.
That was a great interview, man. Talked to Rusty a few times that day after that interview offline. It was fun.
Yeah. He didn't have any, it wasn't like he was mad at you or us or anything for putting him in that situation.
No, he literally.
He's been a professional speaker for long enough to know that he says what he's going to say.
Yeah. I mean, we have enough removal from it now. He literally called me later that day and asked if we had a podcast of it just so he could go back and listen to it and hear exactly what he said so he could put his statement out later that day.
I think some people, there's some people that think that me getting into it with Josh on radio Radio Row is the greatest moment in Sports Radio 610 history. And I don't deny them their feelings about that. I would say that in a lot of ways, it was the exact opposite. I think for me personally, I do think there are a lot of people nationally who think that I am this loose cannon wildfire like SOB, yeah. That I'm a jerk and that I was the instigator with all of that. So I regret that part of it.
Did you ever get anybody coming up to you asking if that was a work with Josh?
If it was scripted,
if it was something to draw attention.
Josh may have put that out there at one point or something. It wasn't.
Definitely not a work.
I've talked to Josh about it. I went on his podcast and talked to him about it. I hadn't looked at a single thing online afterwards about it. I just wanted to move beyond it.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Josh had done videos breaking it down and everything.
It's his deal, man. Yeah. I say it with no criticism. No.
Yeah. So I had a nice interview on his podcast a couple years ago.
Good. Text message. Can we just ratchet down? Oh, I see what you did. They put quotes around that. The ratchets become a thing on the show, Seth. Can we ratchet down any talk of Lance McCullers until the night they say he's playing? I'm just over the speculation at this point. It wasn't a segment we built around Lance. I was just listing a few things that are improbable of happening, but could happen that might get the Astros back to where there's some separation with them and the Rangers and the Mariners. That's all.
He is still a guy who's accounting for many millions of dollars on your payroll. You know, like, I don't want to ignore him completely. I feel like you got to acknowledge that it's there.
Dana Brown has said he expects Lance to be back, not for the start of the season, but not too deep into the season. So this isn't just us watching videos on Twitter. Like, the team has spoken on this.
Yeah.
You know?
They've spoken, but it's also, I totally 100% appreciate and understand people who are like, same. Okay, you lost me at not available at the start of the season.
Totally. I'm merely pointing out to the texter, like, this isn't anything I'm fabricating out of thin air. Like, I probably wouldn't have put that on the list if there weren't signs, at least, that Lance is going to give it a go here in 2025. All right, hey, listen to Sports Radio 610 on the Odyssey app. We're going to do the mock draft injection next, by the way. This one is the first one where I feel like there's like, okay, dude. Okay.
This is the first one where we had draft experts reach out to us and be like, oh my God, are you guys going to do this for the mock draft injection? What the hell is this?
Today is that day. Yes, today is that day. So we'll get to that next, but a reminder to listen for an hour a day. For the next several days, and you're going to be entered into our Slam Dunk in Vegas contest to go to Circa Resort and Casino and watch the college basketball tournament with you and three buddies with $20,000 in your pocket, courtesy of this contest. Circa's amazing, the sportsbook is amazing, the stadium swim is so fun, and you're going to get to take part in all of it if you listen an hour a day on the Odyssey app, and you are drawn the winner of our Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. Download the Odyssey app, listen for an hour each day, and you'll get your daily entry into our amazing contest. Mock draft injection is next.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next. Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
Pain and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. Good to be with you. You want to text us on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line? You can, 713-572-4610. It is 7:45 during draft season, and that means it's mock draft injection time. It's time for Doctors Pendergast and Pain to get out the syringe and jam the syringe into your vein and inject all the mock draft into your veins. Right, Seth?
I like that you frame us as doctors there instead of actual drug dealers. So yeah. Can I at least be an unethical doctor?
Sure. If that makes you feel a little edgier, absolutely.
Yeah, I'll give you some mock drafts. I'll give you some ketamine, whatever you need, baby. Yeah, as long as you get up on stage and dance.
That's
yeah.
it. That's it. Okay. So let's do this, all right? Now, this one is the most controversial that we've done in the week and change so far that we've been doing the old MDI, the old mock draft injection. Thus far, it's been picks that largely make sense. Interior offensive linemen, wide receivers. You got excited yesterday because we had Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic mock draft, Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle from Michigan, the 340-pounder that moves like he's no heavier than 310 pounds.
There's one thing that's coming clear is that there, and I've seen various draft experts say that the picks 20 through 40 this year, again, look like they could be a good meaty part of the draft where there's going to be a lot of guys available that meet that value. So, Gray Zabel, I know I had some concerns about him last week, but I ended up sounding the guard from North Dakota State. I'd be really happy with him.
Sure.
Like, I know it wasn't, like, so far, up until this mock draft, everyone that we've done, I felt like, yeah, that makes sense. That's an area that the Texans could use an infusion. This one today, I don't get this on multiple levels.
Yep.
This doesn't make any sense
at all.
All
right, so this is the first one where we can go. With the 13th overall pick, there's been a trade. The Houston Texans have traded up from 25 to 13, and in the process, they are giving up their second-round picks and third-round picks as well in return for the 13th pick and a fourth-round pick. So 25 overall, a second and a third for the 13th overall pick and a fourth-round pick. With the 13th pick in the Chad Reuter NFL.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select Jaylon Walker, linebacker, Georgia.
Yeah,
Here's what he said. I'll read Chad's assessment, and then I want you to react to it here, Seth. The Texans showed they are willing to make a big move for a special player when they traded up for Will Anderson 2 years ago. Walker can blitz, play the run at the second level, Lineup on the edge.
Sure.
Houston sends its first, second, and third round picks to Miami for this pick and a fourth rounder.
This, okay, this is why this doesn't make any sense. And it has nothing to do with Jalen Walker as a prospect. I would agree with everything that he says there about Jalen Walker.
Good player, yeah.
This is, no. Okay, for one, let's start with trading up. Like, now all of a sudden, oh, the Texans are just the team that's going to trade up for a pass rusher every single opportunity they get because it worked out well with Will Anderson. That was a one-time thing, baby, okay? We did that once. That doesn't mean you're going to go back to the well and do it again when you have other needs on this team. And at the time the Texans did that, they had a plethora of future draft picks.
Yes.
So it was, they had draft picks to burn. You can't use all those draft picks on rookies. You end up having too many rookies on the team. So just by virtue of even trading up that aggressively, I would be very, very skeptical. Yes, Jalen Walker is a very good prospect. He's not a scheme fit at all. Like, he is, if he goes to a 3-4 or a team that kind of likes to use the tweener types more, the Eagles, for instance, it would make a lot of sense. D'Amico Ryans, if he were in need of edge rushers, which right now is not something he needs to go after in the first round right now, D'Amico likes classic 4-3 defensive ends. He wants guys that can play the run as well as be good pass rushers, where Jalen Walker is more of a tweener guy that you wouldn't want him out there all three downs lining up as a 4-3 defensive end. So, okay, you might think, they'll use him more as an off-ball linebacker. Again, I feel like you're good with off-ball linebackers right now, particularly young ones. But if they did take one, I would get it. I just wouldn't trade up for one at this point. It doesn't make sense, and it has nothing to do with Jalen Walker's potential as a pro. I just don't think D'Amico would be interested in spending a first rounder on a guy like this. If D'Amico's going to go after a tweener, it's going to be somebody in the mid rounds or something, or like some journeyman vet that he sees value in. You'd be, like, frankly, you'd be using Jalen Walker. You'd be trading up into the first round or up in the first round to take a guy that you'd be using situationally.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't make sense.
I would say too, Seth, that independent of the scheme fit, and you make great points about the scheme fit, just purely on the draft front, this is a team that's a good team but has needs. And this is a team that is currently and is going to be in the future up against it cap-wise. They need cheap, capable labor. Imagine this team without Blake Fisher and Kalen Bullock this past season. Or hell, yeah. Kamari Lassiter and Kalen. But Kamari, I view Kamari almost as their first-round pick because they traded back. You know, they moved back. And he was their first pick, but he was pick 47. Imagine if this team didn't have those two guys on the team last year. I'm not saying Blake Fisher was great or anything, but you needed him at the end of the year to be a starting right tackle for you. And you're going to need him moving forward to be a starting right tackle for you cheaply for a couple of years. Kalen Bullock, similarly, this team has done pretty well picking in the second and third rounds under Nick Caserio. You know, Nico Collins was a third round pick. Tank Dell was a third round pick. You know, got hurt.
Yeah.
They've done well picking on day two with Nick here. You are forfeiting the opportunity to get two guys on day two to get a guy who, even if he were a scheme fit, that's a lot to give up for a team that drafts pretty well in the second and third round of the draft.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's two cheap, potentially capable players.
Now I have to do that thing that I always do whenever I have a strong opinion about a draft, which is, oh, crap, what if they draft him?
I think there's no chance.
What would the justifications be? Okay, what if he's there at 25? Not trade up for him,
okay.
But if he's there at 25, you might think, okay, the Texans this year did not play a lot of their base 4-3 at all, which is not, I mean, it's people play more nickel than their base fronts these days. Almost every team in the league plays with two linebackers on the field instead of three most of the time. If D'Amico feels like he would like to be or prefer to be in his 4-3 defense more often, but also have a guy that can rush off the edge, maybe then. But in that scenario, you're going back to like, all right, so you're talking about an off-ball linebacker. And are we going to spend a first-round pick on an off-ball linebacker? I don't think it makes sense.
If they were to do that, that may say something about how they feel about Christian Harris, perhaps.
Yeah.
Christian Harris's inability to stay healthy, which has not been just a 2024 issue. Remember, he missed all of training camp his rookie year. Like, injuries have been an issue, and I don't even think it was the calf for Christian Harris that hindered him at the end of the season last year. I think it was a second injury that he got to an ankle or something like that when the postseason rolled around. So that, to me, if they were to make that pick, I don't think it's impossible. I mean, I know I just said no chance, no chance. But if they were to do that, that would tell me that it may have something to do with how they feel about Christian Harris. I don't think there's. Yeah. I'd be shocked if that were the position they took.
Right, and they're already spending heavily at the edge position.
Yeah.
And it's not like your rookie isn't going to cost you a whole bunch of money on the cap.
Yeah.
But it's okay. Your total capital. How are we investing and spending our capital right now? I don't think they would stretch and reach for Javon Walker to the point of trading up within the first round.
You mentioned Daniel Jeremiah. Did you see the tweet he had yesterday that there were in last year's draft there were 12 defensive tackles that he viewed as starters?
Yeah.
And this year it's 24.
Yeah.
Do you think that reduces the chances the Texans take, say, a Kenneth Grant in the first round?
Okay, this is the interesting thing about defensive linemen. It's that, you know, the traits on average matter a lot, and that there's lots of guys who can start, but the guys that are big time impact players, you're gonna usually have to get them in the first round. Edge rushers especially. And there's boatloads of exceptions, everybody. I know, I understand. But I'll be a guy. Like, I was a quality starter in the NFL, but I was never gonna be like the guys that are 10 sack a year type of guys and everything. And you don't spend a first round pick on guys unless you feel like they can be impact players.
That's right.
I still think the Texans, they've got quality starters at defensive tackle. I think D'Amico wants an impact player at defensive tackle. Yeah. And your best shot at doing that is in the first round. So I don't know if this is the year now, but maybe they also think like, okay, but we could use a younger guy who's a quality starter who has upside. Yeah, we'll spend a second or third rounder on that. But I think it might make Kenneth Grant, who I like a lot, fall to 25.
Yeah.
Because a lot of teams might be thinking, all right, there's guys we feel good about. We're just going to hold off and wait and see what happens.
That's a great point. Yeah. With all that, he may still be around at 25. If teams are just going to, yeah, we'll wait till the third round, take the, you know, one of the 15th or 16th best one. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you heading into the 8 o'clock hour. And I want to circle over to the Rockets. There was a lot of coverage of this Doncic trade over the last week. There were a couple things yesterday that triggered me about the Doncic trade that got me angry with the Rockets, of all things. I will explain why coming up next.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, hootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.